2. Archbishop's Palace, City of Manchir, Princedom of Coruscant. So, my lord, Archbishop Clermont Gerling kept his tone rather lighter than he actually felt at this particular moment. Now that you've been here for a 5-day, what do you think?
In what regard, Your Eminence? Bishop Gerald Adamson responded blandly as the Archbishop and his two guests stepped into Gerling's study.
Gerald?
Bishop Kaisi McEnroe said, raising one chiding index finger, and Adamson chuckled. Then he looked back at Gerling.
Forgive me, Your Eminence. There was an edge of contrition in his voice. I'm afraid my sense of humor sometimes betrays me into unbecoming levity. I think that's at least partly a response to the fact that I used to take myself much too seriously. And as the writ says, God made man to smile as well as to weep.
That's true enough, my lord, Gerling agreed. And sometimes laughter is the only way to avoid weeping, I think. He walked around the desk to the comfortable swivel chair behind it, and a courteous sweep of his right hand indicated the even more comfortable armchairs facing it.
Please, my knights, make yourselves easy. May I offer you any refreshment?
Not for me, thank you, Your Eminence. Adamson seated himself in one of the indicated chairs. After we've finished our discussions here, I'm dining with Earl Anvil Rock and his son. I understand Earl Tartarian and at least one or two other members of the Regency Council will be joining us as well. He grimaced humorously. As a bishop executor of Mother Church, I developed a remarkably hard head. Now, as a lowly bishop once more and given to somewhat more abstemious habits, I don't seem to have quite the capacity where alcohol is concerned before my jokes become a bit too loud and my judgment becomes somewhat less reliable than I think it is. He frowned thoughtfully, rubbing one eyebrow. Or that's one possibility, at any rate. Another is that I never was quite as immune to its effects as I thought I was, but no one had the nerve to point it out to me.
He smiled broadly, but then his expression sobered, and he looked very levelly into Gerling's eyes across the Archbishop's desk.
Odd, isn't it, how no one seems to want to challenge the judgment of Mother Church's senior clergy?
Silence hovered for a moment or two, and then Gerling looked up at the aide who had escorted him and his guests from Manchir Cathedral to the Archbishop's palace.
"I think that will be all, Simon," he said. "If I need you, I'll call."
"Of course, Your Eminence."
The dark-haired, dark-complexioned young underpriest's brown cassock bore the scepter of the Order of Langhorne, as did Gerling's orange-trimmed white cassock. And there was a sort of familial resemblance about them, although the underpriest was obviously a native-born Coruscantian. Had he been several years younger, or had Gerling been several years older, he might have been the Archbishop's son. As it was, Adamson was relatively certain it was simply a case of a young man modeling his own behavior and demeanor upon that of a superior whom he deeply respected.
And it would appear there's quite a bit to respect about the Archbishop, Adamson thought. Rather more than there was to respect about me, in the good old days at any rate.
His lips twitched again, remembering certain conversations which had once passed between him and then-Bishop Michael Stainer. It was, he reflected, for far from the first time, a very fortunate thing that Stainer's sense of humor was as lively as his compassion was deep. The door closed behind the departing aide, and Gerling returned his attention to his guests. He'd gotten to know McEnroe surprisingly well over the past month or two. Or perhaps not surprisingly well, given how closely he'd been compelled to work with the other man since his own elevation to the primacy of Coruscant and McEnroe's installation as the Bishop of Manchir. He wouldn't have gone quite so far as to describe the two of them as friends yet,
Colleagues was undoubtedly a better term, at least this far. They shared a powerful sense of mutual respect, however, and he'd come to appreciate that McEnroe had been chosen for his present position at least in part because he combined a truly formidable intellect with a deep faith and a remarkably deep well of empathy. Despite his installation by a foreign, heretical, schismatic church, he'd already demonstrated a powerful ability to listen to the priests and laity of his bishopric. Not simply to listen, but to convince them he was actually hearing what they said, and that he would not hold frank speaking against them. No one would ever accuse him of weakness or vacillation, but neither could any honest person accuse him of tyranny or intolerance. Adamson, on the other hand, was so far a complete unknown. Gerling knew at least the bare bones of his official history, yet it was already obvious there were quite a lot of things that official history had left out. He knew Adamson had been Archbishop Erik Dinas's bishop executor in Carus before Dinas's fall from grace and eventual execution for heresy and treason. He knew Adamson came from a merely respectable Temple Lands family, with considerably fewer and lower-placed connections than Gerling's own family could boast. He knew Adamson, as bishop executor, had more than once reprimanded and disciplined Archbishop Michael Steiner when Steiner had been simply the Bishop of Tellisburg, and that he had been imprisoned, or at least placed under house arrest, following the Kingdom of Carus's decision to openly defy the Church of God Awaiting. And he knew that since that time, Adamson had become one of Steiner's most trusted and valued troubleshooters, which explained his current presence in Coruscant.